Row House Cinema joins you in supporting WRCT. Row House Cinema is a single-screen theater in the historic Lawrenceville neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Each week, they choose a new movie theme, showing classic, cult, foreign animation, fun, and fascinating films in a magical setting. Their concession stand features natural popcorn with real butter, craft beer, and vegan options. Row House Cinema is located at 4115 Butler Street in Lawrenceville. For more information, visit their website at www.rowhousecinema.com or call 412-904-3225. If you or your organization is interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities.
Today, I started loving you again. I'm right back where I really always been. I got over you just long enough, let my poor heart mend. But today, I started loving you again. Fool I was to think I could get by. Teardrop that I cried. I got known the worst was yet to come. Crying a time for me just begun. I started loving you again. So I'm right back where I really always been. I got over you just long enough, let my poor heart mend. Today, I started loving you again. Started loving you again. So I'm right back where I really always been. I get over you just long enough, let my poor heart mend. But today I started loving you again.
WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM, rocks.
Welcome to the show. What a big news weekend and so many different things happening. The Kyle Rittenhouse case is the trial is into closing arguments and the jury will be deliberating. We may have a verdict soon. We don't yet know. We're going to talk about the case related to the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. There's wacky stuff going on there. So many different things. But one of the big pieces of news, news elements, I would even call it, breaking at the very end of last week and into the weekend, is the indictment of former Trump advisor Stephen K. Bannon, who has indeed been indicted on contempt for ignoring a subpoena from the committee investigating the January 6th Trump riots. And of course, wanting to know Steve Bannon's role in that, given all of the public statements that he has made. Very logical person that they would want to talk to. He ignored the subpoena. He is indicted. He is reportedly surrendering to authorities today and will be arraigned. This is a big deal, and it is yet another Trump associate who has been indicted for different reasons, of course. New York Times reporting, Bannon indicted on contempt charges over House's Capitol riot inquiry. Stephen K. Bannon, a former top aide to Donald Trump, had refused to comply with subpoenas from the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on Congress. Stephen K. Bannon, a one-time senior aide to Trump, was indicted by a federal grand jury Friday. Two counts of contempt of Congress after his refusal to provide information to the House committee investigating what you and I and reasonable people around the world know of as the Trump riots. Bannon, who's 67 years old, declined last month to comply with subpoenas from the committee seeking testimony and documents. The House then voted to hold Mr. Bannon in criminal contempt of Congress. The House referred the matter to the U.S. Attorney's Office for a decision on prosecution. Trump has directed former aides and advisors to invoke immunity and refrain from turning over documents. A Justice Department spokesman said Bannon was expected to turn himself into authorities Monday today and make his first appearance in federal district court in Washington later today. A lawyer for Bannon didn't respond to a request for comment. This is going to be a really, really crazy period of time. The Department of Justice putting out a statement, official statement about what they did. Stephen K. Bannon indicted for contempt of Congress, two charges filed for failing to honor House subpoena. Bannon indicted on two counts, which I already told you. One count involving his refusal to appear for a deposition. Another involving his refusal to produce documents. Remember that you can subpoena an individual. You can also subpoena documents. He refused to show up and he refused to provide the documents. I don't know that we really need to read much more of the statement. We continue to see a growing number of Trump associates that have been indicted. We now have Steve Bannon, Tom Barrack, Elliot Broidy, Michael Cohen, who is down to his last 10 days or so of his home confinement sentence. Michael Flynn, we're going to hear from him later in today's program. Rick Gates, Paul Manafort, George Nader, George Papadopoulos, Roger Stone, and Alan Weisselberg. Quite a cadre, I guess we would say, of characters there. And the question continues to be, is this going to reach Donald Trump ever? I continue to believe it will not. I continue to believe that the worst case scenario for Trump would be some kind of business problem. I don't believe this is ever going to reach Donald Trump. As you will hear in my comments later on, it is now being alleged by one of Trump's former press secretaries that he would hold off the books meetings specifically to circumvent records laws, to prevent there being records about some of his meetings. And arguably that is a criminal issue, but I just continue to believe that it is not going to get to him. And it is not for lack of deserving it. It is because of the system and the political forces that we have at play in the United States. So what is ultimately going to happen with Steve Bannon? We don't know yet. The arraignment coming later today, believed to be, and this could be, there are now allegations being made that there are subpoenas going out to Mark Meadows, Trump's then chief of staff, potentially to people like Stephen Miller and others, if they will also attempt to. That's the one other thing I wanted to mention. What Steve Bannon did is staying loyal to Trump. As the New York Times reports, Trump directed Bannon and others not to comply with these requests for their physical presence and the requests for documents to be turned over. So Bannon is staying loyal to Trump. Now, Trump no longer has pardon power. Remember, Trump pardoned a number of different people. Michael Flynn's one of them, who we're going to talk about later. Trump doesn't have pardon power anymore. So either there is a play that Trump will eventually be president again and pardon them if they stay loyal. That's a long shot. It's not that it's impossible or implausible, but it's a long game. You've got to wait years for to see if Trump is even going to run, and then see if he's going to be the nominee, and then see if he's going to win, and then see if he'll pardon you. So that's a very long play. The other part of it would be they just believe ultimately they're going to get out unscathed, and that remains to be seen. But we'll see what happens at the arraignment today and what the next step is here. Maybe there is a timing out aspect. Maybe Bannon thinks, OK, I'm going to get indicted, but in the time that my case will be pending, the committee will be done and I might get a slap on the wrist. Probably not a big deal, but I will have avoided providing testimony or documents. I don't know. OK, I don't know what the legal strategy is, but we're going to see very, very soon. Later in the show, we're going to talk about the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. And we're going to talk about the mom, Wendy Rittenhouse, in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial later in the show. Now, there is now a very wild controversy involving the defense lawyer in the case over the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, a trial of multiple officers who killed Ahmaud Arbery. And that case now is getting attention because the defense attorney there made a wild statement in court that he doesn't want any more black pastors coming into the court and sitting with the family of the victim, Ahmaud Arbery. Now, when he said he doesn't want more black pastors, any sensible person who interprets language would say, so white pastors would be okay, because that sounds racial and that sounds crazy. Let's look at the clip. This is attorney Kevin. I don't know. I don't actually know whether it's pronounced Kevin Gow or Kevin Guff. This case taking place in Brunswick, Georgia. Here he is saying he's been seeing black pastors coming in to sit with the family of the victim. He doesn't want them in there. Take a listen to this. This is crazy.
Over 100. The idea that we're going to be serially bringing these people in to sit with the victim's family one after another.
Now, these people, you could say that's edgy enough, but you don't have to wonder, because he goes and says, we can't have black pastors coming in here.
Obviously, there's only so many pastors they can have. And if their pastor's Al Sharpton right now, that's fine. But then that's it. We don't want any more black pastors coming in here or other.
And if you're watching, there's a woman you can actually see wearing a red blazer who clearly is instinctively doing a double take, but then resisting the double take and just playing it cool, because what this guy is saying is so bonkers.
Jesse Jackson, whoever was in here earlier this week, sitting with the victim's family, trying to influence a jury in this case. And I'm not saying the state is even aware that Mr. Sharpton was in the courtroom. I certainly wasn't aware of it till last night. But I think the court can understand my concern about bringing people in who really don't have any ties to this case other than political interests.
Now, he is not wrong about, listen, people are not connected to the case, and there is a degree to which this can be used to influence the jury. You could make the argument, by the way, there's a militia member who's been sitting in the courtroom in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. We'll get to that later. But the idea of people in the courtroom to influence juries, longstanding topic. The there's a legitimate point to be made about tactics to influence juries. But what is the relevance of black pastors? And as soon as you open that door, you just sound completely off the wall. And he then apologized, but actually says, I've been asked to apologize. Now, what I love is that the judge actually says, listen, this court, meaning, you know, in courts in the U.S., when they say the court, they mean the judge. The judge is like, I didn't ask you to apologize. So the fact that you've been asked doesn't really mean anything to me, which is great that the judge did. This judge making a lot more sense than the one in the Rittenhouse trial. And then the apology also includes this classic thing of, if anyone was inadvertently offended, then I apologize. And I've been asked to apologize. What a sincere apology. I'm apologizing if anyone was offended because I've been asked to by others. Anyway, take a look at this. This is the apology.
Your Honor, I've been asked to address some comments the other day. The court hasn't asked me to do that.
Whatever you've been asked to do has not been asked by the court.
Very well. I will.
It's already good. Here we go.
Court note that if my statements yesterday were overly broad, I will follow up with a more specific motion on Monday.
What's funny is the statements weren't overly broad. They were too narrow. That's actually the problem. If he had said more broadly, the revolving door of pastors to sit with the family may be a technique to influence the jury. Or if he had even said the revolving door of public figures coming in, it wasn't that he was too broad. He wasn't broad enough. When you say the problem is black pastors, it's not a problem of breadth. It's a problem of specificity.
Putting that and those concerns in the proper context. And my apologies to anyone who might have inadvertently been offended.
All right.
Good judge. I actually like this judge. I haven't watched as much of this trial as the Rittenhouse trial, but and this judge may have done odd things, but I feel like he's been significantly more professional. And we're going to get to, you know, a lot of the very strange things that were said by the Rittenhouse judge.
Uncharged piccolos.
That being one of them. I actually like how this judge has been running the case, but everything about it, we can't have black pastors coming through. I've been asked to apologize. The judge is like, I didn't ask you to. That's not kind of neither here nor there. And if anybody, I apologize if anyone was offended. It's like the quintessential non-apology apology, but there it is. So things not in the Rittenhouse case, the judge is more the cartoon. In this trial, it's more the defense attorney. So send me your thoughts on this. You can find me on Twitter at DPacman. And then after the break, we'll talk about Judge Bruce Schroeder in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Welcome back to the show. I invite you to subscribe on my website for extra content every day produced specifically for our members. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. It takes just a minute or so, and you get instant daily access to the bonus show. It's an additional show we do every day for our paid members. You also get a commercial-free audio feed if you would prefer. You get a commercial-free video feed if you prefer. We also have a members-specific line that you can use to call in when we do our viewer town halls. We did one a couple of weeks ago. We've got another one that I'm going to be announcing very soon and very strongly, I might add. And our members also get priority access to me during the viewer town hall. So all of those member benefits and more are available for not a lot of money, folks, really not a lot of money. And if you would like an even littler amount of money, you can use the coupon code BETTER21 to get a huge discount on my website, joinpacman.com. Appreciate everybody who signed up over the last couple of weeks. We've had a nice little influx of new members. All right. Earlier, we talked about the defense attorney in the trial over the killing by police of Ahmaud Arbery. Now we are going to talk about the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Now, this trial has become so toxic where if you have anything but a completely black and white view on, if you have a black and white view on the matter, half of the audience flips out on you. If you have a gray area view of different aspects of the trial, then everybody ends up upset for the most part. I've already said, I believe that the entire Kyle Rittenhouse situation is a result of educational, parenting, and cultural failure in the United States. Some of the most disgusting aspects of gun culture, militia culture, vigilantism, et cetera, in the United States. And at the same time, I believe that the facts in the case support a self-defense, acquittal, at least on two of the three main counts in the case, given the narrow nature with which those statutes are written. I've already said it. OK, so please don't come back to me on that stuff. Now, I already went out last week. I went over last week when the judge, Bruce Schroeder, flipped out on the prosecutor Binger in the case, saying you were getting dangerously close to violating the Fifth Amendment when you started asking Kyle Rittenhouse during testimony about his the timing of when he is first giving his full version of events. You're sort of going after his right to silence and implying guilt there. And the judge kind of flipped out on the prosecutor, and people have their view about that. Now, I've gotten a bunch of emails from people saying, David, the judge is fine. There's no issue with the judge at all. First and foremost, I would urge folks, if you've not been following the case over the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, compare the role of the judge in the Rittenhouse case to the role of the judge in that other case. Judges, in a way, are like referees in sports. And if you follow sports, if you're talking about the referee, it's a problem. OK, if the story in a baseball games in a baseball game becomes the umpire and their ball and strike calls, it's probably because the umpire is at least theoretically doing something wrong because they're making themselves their presence known. In a basketball game, if the biggest topic of discussion is the foul calls by referees, the referees are in, they're doing too much and they're playing too big a role. It's probably not good. And much the same way, in the Rittenhouse case, the judge has put himself front and center. To even give you an example, the judge is so wacky and cartoonish that people send me for my soundboard for when we broadcast the trial clips of the judge. First of all, there's the judge being obsessed with food. And so, for example,
by the way, how are the calzones? The food is here.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. Lunch is here. Pizza is here. But we have Subway tomorrow.
Okay. The judge at one point asking the jury not to go to the bathroom in the courtroom, like literally do not use the courtroom as your bathroom.
Whatever you do, make sure you go to the bathroom somewhere other than the courtroom.
And then also the judge seemingly completely technologically inept and the defense being able to use in their favor that the judge is completely inept, at one point referring to pixels as pickles.
Uncharged pickles.
Okay, so that's that. The judge also has a reputation for attorneys wanting to avoid him. And in addition to that, the flipping out on the prosecutor, whether or not you believe the content of the flipping out was justified, many legal analysts have said when the judge flips out on the attorneys for one side, that is known to influence jurors. And thus, when the jurors see the judge flipping out only on one side, you could make the case that that is influencing the jury. Now, you could say, well, maybe the judge should be flipping out on one side. Fine. You send the jury out in order to do it. And so that's that. Now, a couple other things that the judge has done that are sort of questionable. During cross-examination of a reporter from Real America's Voice, who is pro Kyle Rittenhouse, posted pro Kyle Rittenhouse things to social media, the prosecutor on cross-examination started getting into what exactly is Real America's Voice. And Real America's Voice is just a wacky right-wing channel. It's sort of like if Alex Jones InfoWars reporters are there, it would be very relevant for the jury to understand what is InfoWars. And when the prosecutor got to the question about what is the political leaning of Real America's Voice, the judge bails out the defense and says, you're not going to ask that.
YouTube channel?
Yes.
Do you have your own independent website that you operate?
I do have an independent website, yes.
What's that called?
DrewHLive.com.
What is that?
That's my own independent website.
But is it like a news source? Is it
it's
a
an
blog?
Independent website.
Of what type?
For myself.
You characterized yourself as a professional commentator. What does that mean?
That means that I comment on the news professionally on a daily basis.
Professionally meaning you're paid?
Yep.
Who pays you?
I am employed by Real America's Voice.
Right.
Real America's Voice?
Yes.
What is that?
That is a news commentary, breaking news website. They have their own apps and, website.
Other than getting paid by Real America's Voice, do you get paid by any other source to do your professional commentating?
No.
Is your Drew H. Live website part of Real America's Voice?
No.
The things that you post on your website, Drew H. Live, do you also share those with Real America's Voice?
Depending on what's going on where I'm at. But this is unrelated to what happened in Kenosha because I was not employed by Real America's Voice at the time.
That's something that's happened since then?
Yes.
And does Real America's Voice have any sort of political bias or agenda or anything like that?
What is the bias?
It goes to the bias of the witness, Your Honor.
The bias in what respect? I assume.
So anyway, to cut to the end, the judge doesn't allow that to be asked about. And again, it's like if the witness were Alex Jones and you're not allowed to inquire about what InfoWars is. It's absolutely wild. And then lastly, a very strange comment, which some are saying is a political comment. One day they were having Asian food, as the judge says. And the judge made what some are calling a political comment by saying, hopefully the food's not stuck on one of those boats in Long Beach Harbor, alluding to this supply chain controversy. And of course, they're in Wisconsin, folks, so it's a completely unnecessary comment. But it's a joke that goes, some argue, to political bias.
Let's hope for 1 o'clock. I don't know. Hope the Asian food isn't coming. Isn't on one of those boats in Long Beach Harbor.
Now, even if he doesn't mean thanks to Biden, it's on one of those boats, it's off color and it's not appropriate. And the judge is very, very wacky. So my feeling is, while on the major charges, not guilty follows the facts, the entire thing seems like a foregone conclusion. And the judge seems to be very much so helping that along. So that's the judge. Let's now go to the mom. One of my concerns when it comes to the Kyle Rittenhouse trial has been that whatever the legal outcome, the right wing media is going to make this kid a hero or a martyr. And what I mean by that is, if he's acquitted, he will be made a hero, and it will be a bellwether example of how you can choose to go out and be an armed vigilante, even if you've got the gun illegally. You can create a situation in which you end up fearing for your life, not denying maybe he did, right? You create a situation and you go free. And he is going to, if he is acquitted, be held up as a hero by the right, when in reality, this is a failure of parenting. It's a failure of culture. It's a failure of so many different things. If he's found guilty on any of the counts, he does any jail time, whatever, he will be then seen as a martyr. And the problem here is thinking that he did something good. He shouldn't have been there. He was carrying the gun illegally. After killing one person, he didn't even try to leave. He ended up killing a second person and shooting a third person. So, of course, in the lionization of Kyle Rittenhouse, right in the middle of the trial, Sean Hannity decides to interview the mom, Wendy Rittenhouse. She agrees to go on Fox News, and it's as bad as you can imagine. Let's just start somewhere. The topic of white supremacy comes up, and Sean Hannity says, I've seen no evidence at all that would suggest he's even maybe a white supremacist. Let's take a look at that.
When the then candidate, now president of the United States, and other elected officials that don't know anything about your son refer to him as a white supremacist, I have yet to see any evidence whatsoever that he is such a person.
Now, I don't know if Kyle Rittenhouse is a white supremacist. I've not mentioned it during the trial, and I just don't know. But Kyle Rittenhouse was photographed at a bar holding up that upside down OK symbol, now often associated with white supremacy. So it might not be definitive evidence. But Hannity saying there's no evidence is a very weak comment. Part of the this kid's a victim. He's a great kid. All of his beliefs are great. And he's a hero for what he did with the guns. Kyle Rittenhouse's mom, by the way, is a big fan of the judge. Now, it's not a big surprise for those saying the judge has just called balls and strikes and isn't helping one side or the other. If the mom felt the judge was not useful to them, she would not be saying the judge is great. Okay, so big surprise. She likes the judge. Take a look.
The judge is very fair. People that I talked to that lives in Kenosha all their lives, they told me that Judge Schroeder is a very fair judge and he doesn't allow no nonsense in his courtroom.
Not a surprise. Not a surprise. The judge's decisions have been, to the extent that he's a factor at the trial, his decisions have been mostly good for the defense. Then the topic came up of when Kyle Rittenhouse was being directly examined by his own defense attorneys, he started crying. The images in the video have gone viral. I've not commented on was it real or not? Were the tears real? Was it staged? Whatever. I have no idea. She says, she was heartbroken by that.
That's your son. How did that make you feel?
I just broke down with Kyle crying like that. It made me feel heartbroken, sad, and I wanted to just go up there and just hug him and tell him it would be okay.
This is part of turning the kid into a hero via turning the kid into a victim. That's part of it. Here's the real cherry on top. Would Kyle do it all over again in the same way? And his mom says he probably would.
Have you and your son discussed whether or not if he had to do it over again, he would go into a situation like that?
With Kyle, I know him and he probably would do it again because that's the type of person he is.
Not even, and I would encourage him not to go, even if it's self-defense. This is a tragedy to be avoided at all costs. Two people are dead. It has ruined our lives. Look at what we are now embroiled in. I would tell him not to go, Kyle. Yeah, he'd probably do it again. They've learned nothing. It's not like he went and saved 10 people, so it was worth it. It's not like he went and through his providing medical, as he was supposedly there to do, people survived who wouldn't have. He just went and people died and now he's in the middle of a trial and he would do it all again. Sadly, I think she's right. That's the saddest thing. And, you know, the right loves to talk about the importance of parenting. This is a total parenting failure. And the interview is proof of that. Now, one last thing I want to say about the mom, and I want to say it carefully. There are people who have written to me and they said, David, the mom isn't cognitively there. If you listen to their interviews and the way she talks, and you see her presence in the courtroom, she's disabled cognitively, and everybody should give her a break. I don't know where people are getting that. I researched it because 8 or 10 people wrote to me about that. Is it her appearance that you're basing that on? I found nothing about the mom being cognitively limited in any way. I don't know if the comments are classist in some way. I have no idea what her level of education is. I believe she's a nurse, so to some degree she's educated. I don't know anything about that. And for me, it's not playing a role in analyzing the things that she's saying. So there's the interview with the mom, not particularly surprising as far as the content. And we'll have some of these clips on our Instagram at David Pakman Show, where you can also comment and let me know what you think of that interview. All right, let's get to two stories that are just it's not beyond parody. They seem almost beyond reality, but unfortunately, they are very, very real. Remember back on January 6th when the Trump rioters, who are Trump supporters, presumably, because they're there rioting for Trump to remain president, started chanting "Hang Mike Pence." And of course, "Hang Mike Pence" was related to Mike Pence being asked to, being by some expected to do something, even though it's not exactly clear what he could do. He couldn't actually do anything to delay the counting of the votes on January 6th in Congress. Donald Trump, in a now revealed interview with ABC reporter Jonathan Karl, which is being released as part of the release of Jonathan Karl's new book. We have audio. We're going to play it for you. Donald Trump defends his supporters chanting "Hang Mike Pence," saying, listen, Pence was safe. He wasn't actually in danger. And the supporters were right to be angry because the election was stolen. Again, going to the previous reports that Trump was furious with Pence, demanding Pence do something to keep him in office, which Pence couldn't do. So, again, another story verified. Let's go to the audio. Here is the interview from March of this year. Take a listen to this.
Were you worried about him during that siege? Were you worried about his safety?
No, I thought he was well protected, and I had heard that he was in good shape. Mm-hmm. No, because I had heard he was in very good shape. But no,
you heard those chants. That was terrible. I mean, it was, you know,
he could have. Well, the people were very angry.
So Jonathan Karl says, the chance, the hang Mike Pence, was terrible. And Trump says, well, people were angry, and that they were legitimately angry.
And hang Mike
because
Pence.
It's common sense, John. It's common sense that you're supposed to protect. How can you, if you know a vote is fraudulent, right?
Yeah.
How can you pass on a fraudulent vote to Congress?
So there's like three different things there. First of all, notice how they mention common sense when they can't really give you empirical reasoning or data to justify. It's common sense. It's common sense. When I was in a jury room, thinking back to, you know, all these trials we've been covering, when I was in the jury room and we were supposed to decide whether something was self-defense on the basis of the way the law was written, two to four of the six jurors insisted it's common sense it was self-defense rather than what does the law say. So common sense comes out often when they can't actually explain their positions. And then again, if you know a vote is fraudulent, Trump says, how can you pass a fraudulent vote onto Congress? Whatever your belief about that, which Trump never demonstrated there was anything fraudulent, whatever your belief about that is, Pence did not have the ability or authority to prevent the election from being certified for Joe Biden. Common sense would be Trump is on trial in multiple jurisdictions. That would be common sense here. So then basically just as interestingly, this is crazy what Trump is saying. He's defending the chance of hang Mike Pence because the anger at Pence was legitimate as Trump sees it. And Pence was safe per Trump's opinion on that. The question is brought to Republican Senator John Barrasso, and he's given the opportunity to criticize Donald Trump's defense of the chance of hang Mike Pence. And Barrasso doesn't do it. If you need another signal about whether the Republican elected officials are still standing in line behind Donald Trump supportive, at least publicly, of Trump, it's this. Take a look at this. He's given the opportunity to criticize Trump for this, and he doesn't.
Finally, I want to ask you about President Trump. As you know, John Karl, our chief Washington correspondent, had an interview with President Trump he released this week where the president seems to defend those who were saying, hang Mike Pence on January 6th.
Seems
want to show it.
Does.
Were you worried about him during that siege? Were you worried about
no,
his safety?
No, I thought he was well protected, and I had heard that he was in good shape. No,
you heard those chants. That was terrible. I mean, it was, you know,
he could have. Well, the people were very angry.
We're saying hang Mike
because
Pence.
It's common sense. How can you, if you know a vote is fraudulent, right?
Yeah.
How can you pass on a fraudulent vote to Congress?
So he says hang Mike Pence is common sense. Can your party tolerate a leader who defends murderous chants against his own vice president?
Well, let me just say, the Republican Party is incredibly united right now, and it's because of the policies
seems
of this
like
administration.
It.
And I think the more that the...
So first response is to say this administration is bad, Biden's, and so it's united the party.
Democrats and the press becomes obsessed with President Trump. I think the better it is for the Republican Party. President Trump brings lots of energy to the party. He's
praises
enduring
Trump.
Force. Elections are about the future, not the past. And that's what we saw in Virginia and all across the country. And the Republican policies and the Trump policies of a strong economy and American energy, not begging Vladimir Putin to produce more oil, which is what Joe Biden is doing.
Remember, the question is it a problem that Trump is saying it's okay to say hang Mike Pence? And so far, we've got no answer from John Barrasso.
Those are policies that we're going to continue to run on in the future.
So you have no problem with the president saying hang Mike Pence is common sense?
I was with Mike Pence in the Senate chamber during January 6th, and what happened was they quickly got Vice President Pence out of there, certainly a lot.
He's basically saying the same thing. Pence wasn't really in danger, so it's okay. It's not a big deal.
Faster than they removed the senators. I believed he was safe the whole time. I didn't hear any of those chants. I don't believe that he did either. And Vice President Pence came back into the chamber that night. And
So he's not even accepting that the chants took place, which is fascinating. So listen, that is really something else. And remember that no Republicans disputed the results of their votes. On the same ballot, you had a bunch of senators and then the Trump-Biden election. The same people saying the Trump-Biden ballot count can't be trusted said nothing about their election count, only Trump. The voting process was legitimate other than Trump-Biden. They only messed with those ballots. These people are disingenuous. They don't actually believe it, but they are unwilling to actually criticize Donald Trump. And much of the reason is Trump still has power, at least for now. Trump may continue to have power beyond 2022. Trump may be the nominee in 2024. And Trump may be president again. And none of them are willing to call him out, even when he says, well, it made sense that the people were mad and Pence was safe. So hang Mike Pence, not really a big deal. Is there any example from history of a president not denouncing chants from his own followers to hang the vice president? Are there even examples from history of a president whose followers chanted hang the vice president? And not that I'm aware of. All right. We have shocking new claims that are coming at a convenient time for the person making them in order to sell books. Of course, they always wait until it's time to sell books. Donald Trump's brief press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, is now making the claim that Donald Trump deliberately had off the books meetings to circumvent records laws. In other words, normal president has meetings that are on the books with rare exceptions for very narrow and specific national security reasons. And there is a record of the fact that the meetings took place. There's records of what was discussed. If the things were classified, there is some version that does not violate classified restrictions on topics or documents that are brought up or whatever the case may be. That's how things normally are. Very rare exceptions for specific national security reasons. Rare, very rare. The allegation from Stephanie Grisham, which she made on CNN, we're going to play it for you in a moment, is that merely to avoid there being records of meetings that Donald Trump was having, he had the records, the meetings off the books. And of course, in the context of Trump trying to prevent January 6th investigators from getting records about who he met with and others in Trump's circle supporting Trump doing that, there's a second layer we have to now contend with, if you believe Stephanie Grisham, which is even if the meetings for which there are records are accounted for to the investigators, Trump allegedly was having certain meetings off the books anyway, so there are no records for some of these meetings. Here is Stephanie Grisham explaining it to Jim Acosta on CNN.
Trying to keep hundreds of pages of documents out of the hands of the January 6th committee, but you think that there are some off-the-book meetings, some in the residence of the White House that lawmakers may want to look into. I mean, Stephanie, you know that residence as well as most ex-officials of that administration. What goes on behind closed doors there?
Absolutely. Lots of meetings take place in the residence where, you know, I mean, I'm hoping that they're looking at call logs, but I have a feeling even sometimes things weren't put into call logs. But a lot of meetings took place because the president at the time was so paranoid of leaks that a lot of our meetings took place in the residence. Number one, so he could keep track of who was in there. And if it leaked out, he would try to, you know, figure that out. But number two, so that it was very much kept off the books and documents, anything that was written down could probably be thrown in the trash where people can't, you know, come and retrieve them to put into the archives. So that happened quite a bit. And I'm sure the Select Committee is aware of that and is looking into that. Mark Meadows was one towards the end who was definitely helping to plan those meetings. So I think that Mark Meadows should be spoken to. I think he will stall.
So, I'm with you guys on, I'm so glad that she has held on to that information until right now, perfectly timed to sell copies of her book. I get it. Okay, I get it. But this fits with everything else we know about Donald Trump, a guy who claimed he would have the most, what was it, like open and transparent administration out of anybody or something like that. And just think, like, what we know about the presidency of Trump is bad enough. There are now things coming out that we are learning, and they're really bad. And then there's a whole other layer of things we probably will never know because of things like this. There are no records or whatever the case may be. Remember that there's also the incredible double standard or hypocrisy that one of the main reasons that Donald Trump said Hillary Clinton was unfit to be president of the United States was she violated the Presidential Records Act because of the private email server and on and on and on. And then, of course, we find out that many people around Trump were also using private email. But then we now find out all of the different ways in which Donald Trump either wants to prevent records from being given even to investigators legitimately demanding them, and even went out of his way to prevent records from being created in the first place. So it's all toxic. It's all insane. It's all wacky. But it's what's going on. And just imagine if this guy gets back into power in 2024, how much worse it's going to be. So we're continuing to follow sort of two stories that are coming together. One is this brewing civil war within the Republican Party. Told you last week, just as one data point, 13 Republicans voted in favor of Joe Biden's eventual $1.2 trillion stimulus package, 13 Republicans crossing party lines to vote in favor. Trump Republicans immediately demanding the removal of those 13 Republicans. Just one data point in this growing civil war, and we've looked at others. That's one story, which we're going to talk about today. The second is what's going to happen in 2024 in terms of Trump running versus not running in the relationship with Mike Pence, et cetera. Well, we have one story that brings both of these two elements together. One of the former White House communications directors under Donald Trump, Alyssa Farah, was on CNN over the weekend and said, number one, Mike Pence is now ashamed of Donald Trump. And number two, she believes that Pence or someone else like Ron DeSantis or others are going to run against Trump in 2024 in the Republican primary if Trump runs, and will try to go after Trump's voters. Now, there's so much to talk about here, so many different aspects to this that are important. But let's first look at what exactly Alyssa Farah said when she appeared on CNN. And we know from the Trump side, his contempt for Mike Pence is very clear, telling him don't be the P word. I don't know if I can say it or not, with regard to his behavior on January 6th and not stopping the certification of the vote, which, of course, Mike Pence had no authority to do. Defending, as I told you earlier, the calls to, quote, hang Mike Pence on January 6th from his own supporters. We know Trump's ire towards Pence. Here is the first indication, direct indication that we have from someone who would know that Pence is ashamed of Trump as well. Let's listen.
So why did Pence talk to him after this? I mean, that was something as just an observer, you know, here you have protesters chanting, hang Mike Pence and all this going on. And yet they still talked after the insurrection. Why is that? What do you make of that?
So to the best of my knowledge, I think Pence by default is somebody who's very deferential to both the chain of command and the institution of the presidency. And I think he would always take a call from Donald Trump. He would always take a meeting if one was requested from him. I think that must have been those must have been very awkward and tough conversations.
Also,
I've always known Mike Pence to be a person of deep character and conviction. So I don't doubt that in those private communications, he communicated how bad that was and how inappropriate it was. But not for him, but for the country. But yeah, I can't imagine that was a comfortable conversation. And I think that you're going to see a bit more distancing as time goes on. Look, there's aspects of the record they did together that I know Pence is proud of, but I know he is ashamed of that day. He's ashamed of how the former president conducted himself.
Wow.
So we expect that Donald Trump will run again for 2024. Do you think that Pence will run against him?
So I think he will, and I'm saying this with no knowledge outside of, you know, any special knowledge.
But it's informed speculation, let's be honest.
I do think that there's this belief that people are just going to clear the field for Trump. I actually think some folks are teeing up to run. I think Pence could be one of them. I think DeSantis might be one of them. I think Mike Pompeo is looking at a political team and what that could look like. And it's a good thing for the party. A coronation of Donald Trump would be the worst thing both for the party, but more importantly for the country.
Interesting.
So we're going to need to have out these debates on the stage, by the way, of was the election stolen? And that's going to be a tough question for some of these folks to answer, because some have...
That would be a fascinating debate to see Republicans have in the primary in 2024.
...really towed the line of the big lie. So I'd love to see some folks run who are going to acknowledge the truth and the reality and actually just try to win over more voters.
Wow. So you do think from your perch, which is a good perch because you used to be press secretary for Pence, you think he will, from your view, what makes you think that, and what do you think that would be like? Because all we have seen from Pence and Trump is Pence being deferential to Trump and being a loyalist to Trump. What do you expect?
I think that Pence knows he's uniquely positioned in that he can tout the record and the things that
is where she goes off the rails.
Americans are still wish he were in office, the 74 million people who voted for Trump, but without a lot of the downside. Now, Grant.
Okay, so let's discuss this. First of all, this is great from the standpoint of hurting Republicans by having them hurt themselves by fighting amongst themselves. I've said before, it's really terrible. It's sad. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating that Democrats have so little going for them that essentially they have to hope that the right just damages itself. And that's a disastrous place to be in. It means you have very little going for yourself. It's an extremely low standard. But to the extent that we want the right to fight amongst itself, what Alyssa Farah is pointing out here is fantastic. Pence ashamed of Trump. Trump has furious with Pence, whatever the case may be. They may run against each other. They may be going after the same voters. That's great. But one thing you have to realize from a practical standpoint is anybody supporting Donald Trump today is not voting for Mike Pence in 2024 unless something radical happens. And what I mean by that is that the people still supporting Donald Trump, and by supporting him, I don't just mean I voted for him and I probably would again. I mean the people still supporting Trump's message today of the election was stolen and it was all rigged and Pence was bad and he did an unpatriotic thing and all these different things. You were so aggressively committed to the whole cult, if that's your belief, that you're not voting for Mike Pence in 2024 in a Republican primary. So the idea that there's so much to fight over in terms of swaying voters in 24, I think Alyssa Farah is wrong on that. But I'd love to see them try because it will damage themselves. But here's the second part of it. Alyssa Farah talks about Pence can go and run on the record of Trump Pence, on the accomplishments. What is she talking about? See, this is where I continue to say, just because we come across a Republican that says like one or two reasonable things, like Joe Biden really won, Liz Cheney is an example. These are still outrageous Republicans who believe crazy things, like Pence has a record to run on. It's completely delusional, first of all, to think that Mike Pence has a political future of any serious kind in the United States. He served as a sort of shield, arguably, to the most incompetent president in history, Donald Trump, to, I guess, help him win some religious voters. And I think he probably did do that, particularly in 2016. And now those very aggressive Trump voters hate Pence because Pence didn't help Trump steal the 2020 election. Who is Pence's constituency, really? Because if you believe it was stolen, then you believe Pence did something wrong by not taking it for Donald Trump. And if you don't like Trump, you've bailed on Trump long ago, and you probably realize that there are no accomplishments to speak of. So it's kind of like a Jeff Sessions type situation. So very interesting to hear from Alyssa Farah. I think she's way off on the idea of Mike Pence having an independent political future. We have another one of these. I still consider these sad stories, but they could be instructive. They could be wake-up calls. A police officer from San Francisco who was suspended, he was on leave for refusing the COVID vaccine, has died of COVID. I am sick of watching people throw their lives away, optionally, statistically speaking, and at the same time contributing to this sense of doom of, are we ever going to get out of this? This is a horrible story. California police officer dies of COVID while on leave for missing vaccination deadline. Now, the requirements work. As of Friday, 97.2% of the San Francisco Police Department were in compliance with the city's vaccination mandate. But we have a specific story here of a San Francisco police officer who was on leave for missing the city's COVID vaccination deadline, has died after testing positive for the coronavirus, according to a police union representative and the officer's wife. We're talking about Officer Jack Nice, who had been on the force 17 years. The police department said in a statement on its Facebook page announcing his death. Nice served in a variety of assignments throughout his career, adding that he is survived by many friends, co-workers, and family members. Chief Bill Scott confirmed to NBC News that Nice, who was described as a widely respected colleague, died Saturday at age 47. Scott declined to comment about cause of death. Nice's wife, Melissa Nice, did say to the San Francisco Chronicle that he had tested positive for the virus last Tuesday. His symptoms became so serious that she called an ambulance to take him to a hospital on Saturday. She declined to say whether he was vaccinated against COVID and said he was by his side, said she was by his side when he died. Folks, statistically speaking, vaccinated people die. Statistically speaking, this is someone who would have had a much milder case if vaccinated. The belief is that he's unvaccinated because he was on leave for not meeting the vaccination requirements. Now, one could say, David, maybe he was vaccinated, but he didn't want to have to provide the dystopian 1984 proof of his vaccine to the department, so he was suspended for that. That's possible, and it strikes me as extraordinarily unlikely. These are not stories to gloat about. These are stories where if we learn something from them, maybe we can get something useful out of them. But these are sad stories. I continue to see these as sad. And it is another person, statistically speaking, growing our sense of doom. Are we ever going to get out of this pandemic? And throwing their life away. And it is really sad. I mean, think about it. He signed up to be a police officer. You could be stabbed as a police officer. You could be shot as a police officer, etc. But a tiny needle, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. So another one of these stories, and I hate to see it. I know there are people in the audience who write to me and say, David, I have no sympathy for these people. I have no empathy for the loved ones that are left behind. I do. Maybe it's my personal flaw. I do. But the real problem is, are we ever going to get out of this if we continue to see this sort of resistance? Horrible, horrible stuff. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. You can call anytime you want. I got a great voicemail from a very nice older lady. She says she's an older lady. She wants me to know the older folks aren't all wacky conspiracy theory spreading Trumpists. She also praises my occasional pronunciation of the animal dog. Take a listen to this.
Hi, David. This is Ann Darcy. Thank you for recently gracing us with the correct pronunciation of the word dog. Anyway, I'm calling to see if you can give a shout out to or some validation to your yes. older listeners.
Yes.
We are not all science denying, Newsmax watching Trumpists as portrayed in popular media. Thank you for clearly presenting facts and knowledge. Keep up the good fight. Thank you.
Absolutely. Ms. Darcy is completely correct. We have listeners that I know of, progressive listeners into their 90s. And that's a fantastic thing. When we say statistically, the disinformation is coming from 65 plus, or when we say statistically on Facebook, it's older folks reshare. Just because we make a statistical statement doesn't mean I would wrongly think that of every one of our older viewers. No doubt about it. And I appreciate the clarification. We have a great bonus show for you today. What actually came from the UN climate summit? What happened there? We're going to talk about it. We will talk about a bipartisan bill that would force big tech to offer algorithm-free feeds and search results. We used to have this. You used to be able to just see your Twitter feed in reverse chronological order. No algorithmic elements at all. We're going to talk about that. And then lastly, things are not looking good in Germany from the standpoint of COVID. And this could be what's coming for the United States. I know. It's like we're doing it again. It's not looking good in Germany. I'm going to talk about that. My brother actually just landed in Germany this morning for work. And let's just say he made sure to get his third dose before going over there. So all of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com. You'll get instant access. And I look for.
Hey, this is Steve Archer.
And Donna Lynch.
From Ego Likeness, you're listening to WRCT Radio.
Listening to WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation. Please stay tuned for more incredible tracks from our extensive, vast, libidinous, and...
balls.
Awesome. I called it libidinous. That doesn't make any... I mean, it's...
is Mark G. of the Evolution Control Committee, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, where the drunken pants are going wild!
Arr, I'm from creationist crucifixion!
Arr, I'm not attractive and I'm from steel curtain.
Me neither, arr.
WRCT.
Pittsburgh, 88.3,
arr. Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best. The smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
Hi, this is Brad Yoder, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
You're tuned to WRCT Pittsburgh's automated...
Hi, you're listening to...
WRCT.
Pittsburgh. CMU. This is Sue Garner.
And Rick Brown.
Have some barbecue sauce.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Music for your inner robot.
Hey, this is Grant Lee Phillips, telling you, if you're wondering where you're tuned to, it happens to be 88.3 FM, radio's finest. WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
WRCT. This is the place that sets the pace for Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is Kristen Hirsch. You're listening to 88.3 FM. WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey, this is Jim from Rusted Root, and you're listening to WRCT 88.3 in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Hey, this is Tom from the band Loose, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hi, we are Microwaves, reminding you that the most important things in life are to crush your enemies,
to see them driven before you,
and to hear the lamentations of their women while listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's where things like this go, right down the drain.
From New York, Rock Raider.
Yeah, yeah, 1-2, Total Eclipse.
From Executioners, and we chilling on WRCT.
Word up, Pittsburgh representing 88.3 FM.
Check
on
it
your
out,
dial. All right? Peace.
This is Satan. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. 88.3 FM.
WRCT Pittsburgh. We love monkeys.
Give me a banana. John McCain, and I'm from Arizona. But when I'm in Pittsburgh, I always listen to WRCT, one of the finest stations in all of radio, and Carnegie Mellon University is one of the finest academic institutions in our country. Be sure at your next election to vote early and vote often.
Things get brighter day by day when you listen to the Big W. Life is lighter in every way when you listen to the Big W. So laugh it up and let yourself go with King Size Radio, the Big WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech.
Yeah, yeah, what's up? This is Total Eclipse.
Word up, Rock Raider from Executioners.
Word up, chilling,
chilling
with
on
RCT.
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah, 88.3.
Check it out, all right?
Word up, real hip hop.
Yeah, thanks, man.
You don't even know it's the hip-hop show.
We do everything.
Okay. Yo, there's only 6 degrees of separation, and we know 5 people you know. How much longer did you really think you could avoid strict flow? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Like this!
Hey, this is Marlon Saunders, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We are moving today to vacate the convictions and dismiss the indictments of Muhammad Aziz and Khalil Islam for the assassination of Malcolm X on February 21, 1965.
A New York judge exonerates 2 men convicted of killing Malcolm X after the Manhattan DA, Cy Vance, accused former FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover of hiding evidence decades ago that would have proven the 2 men were innocent. We'll speak with the independent researcher Abdurrahman Mohammed, whose work played a key role in spurring the new investigation. Then Angela Davis responds to North Dakota banning teaching critical race theory in schools.
What we are witnessing are efforts on the part of the forces of white supremacy to regain a control which they more or less had in the past.
Then to miseducation, how climate change is taught in America. We'll talk to author Katie Wirth. And we go to British Columbia, where Canadian police have raided a First Nations blockade to prevent construction of a new pipeline on Indigenous land.
The RCMP are invading Wet'suwet'en territory once again. There have been approximately 15 arrests that have happened already at Skidamden Checkpoint. Legal observers, media have been arrested. 2 of our Wet'suwet'en elders have been arrested and removed from the territory. Right now we're at Coyote Camp and the RCMP are moving in to remove me from my territory.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The House of Representatives is set to vote today on a 10-year, roughly $2 trillion bill to combat the climate crisis while expanding social programs. The vote comes after Republican Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy spent more than 8 hours delaying a planned vote Thursday with a long and winding speech attacking Democrats over spending, the border crisis, China, Afghanistan, gas prices, and more. The latest version of the Build Back Better Act is dramatically smaller than initially proposed after conservative Senate Democrats Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin demanded cuts. But it still contains many key elements of President Biden's legislative agenda. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt Thursday halted the planned execution of Julius Jones, a black man who was sentenced to death for a 1999 murder he's always insisted he did not commit. And Jones' reprieve came just hours before he was scheduled to die by lethal injection last night. Hundreds of death penalty opponents erupted in cheers inside the Oklahoma State Capitol as news broke that Julius Jones' life had been spared. But as a condition of granting clemency, Governor Stitt said Jones will never be eligible for commutation, pardon, or parole for the rest of his life. This is Reverend Christine Byrd, a longtime supporter of Julius Jones and his family.
I am overjoyed. I know that some people will not see it as a victory, but Julius' life is spared today. And so I am thankful that there will not be an execution today. Would we have wanted something different? Yes. But I am thankful that he will live another day.
In Louisiana, 75-year-old Henry Montgomery walked out of Angola prison Wednesday, winning parole nearly 58 years after he was sentenced to life in prison for a crime he committed as a teenager. Montgomery's case was central to a Supreme Court ruling that extended the possibility of parole to hundreds of people with life sentences for juvenile crimes. In international news, Belarus Thursday opened a heated warehouse to hundreds of asylum seekers who spent days